The Wintrust Business Lunch with Stephen Esposito, the president of Yellowstone Wealth Management in Lake Forest. It's not just a better market, it's a broader market. Is that the headline today, Stephen?
Well, John, yeah, it is, actually. You got a great advanced decline line, and yes, it is. It's definitely spreading out to the rest of the market, which is something we've been looking for a while.
Where is it spreading to? What areas are we talking about?
It's across the board of what I'm looking at right now, except for energy. Energy is one of the weaker spots, but even the commodity-based, the consumer-oriented, the financials, in general, it's just looking good across. There's a lot of green on my screen, put very little red, which is a good thing. And I think that will continue. I think it's a healthier market when you have an advanced decline line of 2 or 3 to 1 positive, even though the indexes are not up that much on a percentage basis, the broad market is doing much better.
You know, I don't want to go down this road very far, but the consumer price index, consumer confidence index was down this week. And yet, like you said, the screens are all green. I know that most folks don't have money in mutual funds, but can you just talk a little bit about the disconnect between how well the economy is doing and people's perception of it?
Well, there is that perception, you know, depending on what state you live in and where you go, where inflation is and the price of the goods, et cetera, that they're purchasing. But I think that that situation would indicate the Fed is now going to stimulate more and maybe cut rates. So if we get negative economic data, and the market has its own way of looking at things, that would mean that the Fed will probably cut further, maybe more times, maybe larger amounts when they cut. And the market right now is focusing on what is coming forward. As we've always said, you've got to skate to where the puck is going.
Yeah.
And the market believes the puck in the next year will have interest rates substantially lower, more stimulus into the economy as a result, lower costs on borrowing, mortgages, et cetera. And I think the market's looking at that right now. And I think it also feels that we may have a soft plus economic landing, where it's not just a soft landing, but actually maybe a little bit better than we think, is what I think the market's looking at today. Of course, that can change next week, but I think that's what you're seeing and why the market's reacting this way.
But are you suggesting that lower rates would be coming in anticipation of more economic problems, or would the Fed be inclined to lower rates because the economy's doing well?
Well, I think you're looking at the Fed overdid it, as we've talked about for months. They should have started in July when we were talking to cut rates, and they haven't. Now they've got to play catch-up.
I see.
So they feel comfortable now that inflation is they're comfortable with inflation and the future of it, and therefore they're going to continue to send signals that we're going to lower rates back down to where they belong. I mean, you now have the 2- and 10-year Treasury in a positive slope by almost 20 basis points. We haven't seen that in 2 years. So all these things combined are giving people reason to be positive going forward, but still boots on the ground in certain areas still reflect higher prices.
So,
but we are seeing them come down.
Yeah.
And I think the market's just forward looking.
Well, I suspect we'll have a recession again in my lifetime, but you don't think we're going to have one next year, huh?
No, I don't believe so. But again, something can come out of left field. Who knows? But as it stands right now, look at oil prices under $68 a barrel. The consumer is going to like that at the pump. If you look at what's happening in the cost, the interest rates, the only negative you're going to have is those savings accounts, those money market rates are going to come down from that 5% next year, maybe into the 3s. That's a negative for savers and potentially the economy. But at the same time, that'll take money out of short-term instruments and maybe go into the market looking for a better rate of return, which
right.
is another reason I think the market's looking at.
Although Terry Savage suggested yesterday that with the market as well as it is, if you have been riding that wave, this might be the time to pull some cash off. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, it depends on how you're allocated. We do things on a very personal basis here. Every client is different, so we don't manage any two portfolios are not identical. We don't use models. So I would agree, depending on the client, where they are in retirement, where they're at. And we have been taking some profits here and there, raising a little bit of cash. But in general, I guess you have to say it to the person. And it depends on, you can sell sectors. I think she's right. If there's certain sectors you're overweight that are now way overvalued, you may want to rotate into other sectors of the market and shift into maybe a little bit more conservative than many of the tech names.
Yeah,
which is what we've been doing.
Well, and it's kind of what I think Terry was hinting at. Stephen Esposito is the president of Yellowstone Wealth Management in Lake Forest. Click on YellowstoneWM.com. Okay, Stephen, let's talk next week.
Thank you.
Bree Fowler, our friend from CNET, where she's a senior writer, is on the line writing and talking today about Meta's new products. Hi, Bree. How are you?
Hi, good. How's it going?
Totally groovy. So what's what are you up to here with Meta? What's the latest there?
Yeah, so they had their usual press event where they unveiled updates to their VR headset, Ray-Ban smart glasses, and a couple other products.
So, like, what's the star of the show right now?
Well, one of the things that they showed off, CEO Mark Zuckerberg unveiled Orion, which is a prototype, and they're saying it is the most advanced glasses the world has seen. They're not bulky, there's no wires, and they interact with your voice, typing, and hand gestures. And they also have what they're calling a wrist-based neural interface, which lets you send a signal from your brain to the device using a wristband.
What did you say?
Yeah, it's definitely out there. And this is just a prototype. There is no release date, no pricing. This is just one of those things that they put out there to make you go, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it could be the future. It could be nothing. They also have more, you know, mainstream things with updates to their headset. Their new VR goggles, the 3S, are going to cost $299. And that's a bit cheaper than the Quest 3, which comes in at about $500 right now.
I don't want to sound my age, but maybe that's just it. I can't get my head around with any confidence self-driving cars. Don't want them. Don't believe in them. You know, when I'm dead and gone, y'all can have them. And I feel the same way a little bit about those goggle sets where you can play games or go places with the virtual goggles. Because while that might be cool to you, you look ridiculous. And I also just have this sort of reaction about how we should be in the real world, not in a world that mimics reality, which I'm way overthinking it, I know. But that's, here again, maybe that's my age, but that's where my head is, Bree.
Well, I don't necessarily think that's true. I mean, they're bulky and they look ridiculous no matter how old you are. And I think that's part of the argument for the glasses, because they look just like regular glasses.
Wow.
You know, you wouldn't know if somebody's wearing glasses or wearing these, you know, fancy high-tech ones. But you still have, you know, the capabilities in there. You know, we've seen products like that before, and none of them have really gone mainstream particularly, although maybe you wouldn't know if they're not as obvious, you know, out in the wild. But, you know, they've also got updates to their AI system. They're going to have voices from celebrities like John Cena and Judi Dench. So, you know, it's an attempt to make AI more human and more conversational.
Speaking of AI, wasn't there a meeting between the government and some scientists in the U.S. or Europe on this?
Well, they're scheduling one. There's going to be a big AI summit in the U.S. actually after the election. The idea is to get scientists and AI experts from at least 9 countries in the EU to San Francisco in late November. So, you know, who knows how things are going to go here and what the new administration's AI policy will be, but a lot of people will be coming here. A lot of people will be talking about it.
And is that like AI in advertising needs to be, you know, transparent? You need to know if it's the real person or not. I wonder what the issues are.
Well, I think it's going to be everything and anything. I mean, some of the most urgent topics that experts are going to deal with would be, you know, AI-generated fakes, but also, you know, dealing with the capabilities of AI systems and the need to put guardrails on them. You know, how much should they be used in things like facial recognition systems or algorithms that decide whether someone should get a home loan or not? These are things that need to be worked out, and, you know, it helps if a lot of the world is on the same page.
I'll tell you, we traveled to Europe a couple weeks ago. When my wife and I came back, it dawned on us, and we were kind of after the fact, that we just stood in front of a machine that looked at our face, and then it let us in, you know, to the country. And it was as much as I don't like some of this, it's very much streamlined the process, and it seemed like the technology went more smoothly this time. What are your thoughts about all that?
Yeah, and I remember talking about that on the show ways back when they were just starting to roll those out, and I've experienced that, you know, even flying domestically in U.S. airports. And it's one of those things where people need to know that if they do feel uncomfortable, they can opt out. But the thing is, you know, I'm standing in line and there's, you know, God knows how many people behind me that may be running late for their flights. You really want to be that person. But it is your right to do that if you want to. I just haven't been able to do it myself yet.
Is the hesitancy that people don't want the government capturing their image and doing God knows what with it, something like that?
Yeah, the machine, what it's supposed to do is compare the image that it takes from your face with that camera to the image on the driver's license or passport that
right.
it scans to
right.
verify that you are you. And that data is not supposed to go anywhere after that. But, you know, we've seen problems with stuff like this or any kind of data collecting technology so many times over the years. And it makes you really skeptical as to, you know, if that data is being destroyed and where it might be going if it isn't.
Elon Musk's X had some sort of report that released some of their metrics. Is that right?
Yeah, this is their first transparency report since Musk bought the company. The report kind of looks into what they're doing as far as content moderation and, you know, taking down posts that may not be suitable for people looking at X. You know, it's different because Elon Musk came in and he said he wanted to be a free speech absolutist and just kind of let things go. And he also laid off tons of people in content moderation and dealing with, you know, threats like bots and scammers and things like that. So, you know, even if they want to keep tabs on stuff like this, they have their work cut out for them. But the company, the report shows that they removed millions of posts and accounts from the site in the first half of this year. They suspended nearly 5.3 million accounts, and that's up from 1.6 million accounts in the first half of 2022.
Where was it, in France, that the head of Telegram was arrested when he got off his plane because of all of the criminal activity on his platform? I wonder if the U.S. would ever go that far in monitoring or asking the CEOs of these companies to monitor the traffic on their pages.
Well, the problem with Telegram and what makes it different from something like X or Twitter is that it is encrypted. They can't see what's going back and forth. And that's why it's used by people in the criminal underworld, but also people like journalists and democracy advocates in countries that aren't democratic and people that need to be private for whatever reason. And it's, you know, even if they want to, by design, they can't really stop or keep tabs on things like something like a social media platform where everything is out in the open.
Okay. Always nice to talk to you. I wish we had more time. We don't. We'll talk more another day. Thank you, Bree.
Thanks a lot.
Bree Fowler is a senior writer at CNET. You can read stuff like that there. Hey, what's your credit score? I don't want you to stress about this, but some people do, and it is an important number. Writing about that is Emily Stewart, a senior correspondent at Business Insider. Emily, talk to us about our credit scores. What's the latest on that, and what should the number be?
I mean, our credit scores are really kind of like the lifeblood of the credit economy, the consumer economy. It matters whether or not you can get a decent rate on your car loan or get a rental application approved. It might even matter how much your car insurance it costs you. So it's a big deal. I mean, there's no specific, I think, like, what is the good score? Or, like, what's the perfect score? I think a lot of people would like somewhere in, like, the 700, 800 range. But it is something that I think, you know, it's tricky, right? If it's bad, you're in a pickle. But at the same time, it's one where, like, sometimes I feel like, at least for me personally, I think for a lot of people, the minute that it comes up, it kind of causes your stomach to turn a little bit. You think something might have happened or something might be wrong because you realize that it's a big deal in the economy.
Yeah. Well, just back up a little bit. So if you have a low credit score, your insurance premium or rate is different than if you have a good credit score?
On your car.
Hold on a second.
Score to make it more expensive. I mean, in some places, also your employer can take a look, too, in your credit report.
Really? My employer? What would my employer do with that?
I mean, it's a situation where, let's say, maybe you're handling money or something, and you're up for a job. Like, they might want to know what your credit looks like if you're in a bunch of debt, something like that.
It would seem to me like that would be an almost privacy issue. That is,
yes.
Maybe I have a bad credit score. Maybe I've not handled my, maybe I've done nothing wrong, but I just haven't used a lot of credit, or maybe I have. I don't know that that is a reflection of what kind of employee I'm going to be, even if I'm handling money.
Yeah, I mean, I think Barrett is for certain types of jobs, right? But if your credit report shows something that's really a red flag, like that might be something that they're going to look at. But again, it's not every employer, but it is something that I think just to keep in mind that people don't realize how much a credit report is sometimes, I think, overutilized in the economy in some way. A lot of creditors can access your information, and when you can get a look at who accesses your information, it can be a little bit weird.
But you also write about how this is a commodity that's actually valuable to the credit companies, right? To the agencies that monitor your credit score. If we're worried about it or overusing it, that ain't going to go away anytime soon because that's a profit center for them, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the way that, you know, the credit bureaus make money is they kind of collect your data from creditors and then they sell that data back to their creditors, right? But there are also services that some of them offer and also other businesses offer that I don't want to say prey upon, but I guess that's the word I'll use here, kind of use our anxieties about our credit to kind of get money out of us. So I think a big example here is credit monitoring, which is a service a lot of people I've heard of have used. A company will say, we'll keep an eye on your credit, make sure nobody is opening an account in your name, doing anything funky. And a lot of people maybe will pay for that, say $25 a month. And what a lot of consumer advocates say is that that's not really worthwhile. A lot of the time when somebody is committing fraud on your account or committing identity theft, they're doing it on accounts that already exist. So basically, they've stolen your credit card number. A lot of the time, too, if they do catch identity theft, it's already happened. And I think, you know, in credit monitoring, what's important for people to remember is a lot of the stuff you can do by yourself. And you don't need to obsess, but you can keep an eye on your credit score for free. Your credit card company probably will show it to you. You can also use a service like Credit Karma. You can freeze your credit for free if you want, and that is an option available to everyone. You can also get a look at your credit report pretty regularly. After the pandemic, the three bureaus have to show you your credit report for free weekly. So you probably don't need to look every week. I think probably monthly or something is a good idea. You can do a lot of this stuff for free without paying somebody else to do it for you.
I wondered about something you just said, and that is that the people that do credit card theft aren't doing it on new cards in your name as much as they're doing it on cards that are already opened and active. We froze our credit. I was at a store making a purchase, and they said, "Do you want to open up an account?" And I said, "Sure, I'll save 20% on this purchase." They said, mm-hmm. "It can't go through." And I went, "Oh, yeah, I forgot I froze my credit." So I was happy to see it at work in that instance, but that doesn't mean that the credit card in my wallet, then I took out my other credit card and I paid with that. So it's not freezing my credit. It's not insulating me from theft that way, is it?
Right, exactly. I think that's an important thing to keep in mind. And also, again, like I said before, a lot of credit card fraud really does occur on accounts you already have. Somebody got a hold of your credit card, someone got a hold of your credit card number and went shopping. It's not somebody opening up a new account in your name.
And the irony of all this, if you will, is that in order to get a good credit score, you should use your credit card, right?
Yeah, I mean, that is kind of the thing, right? The best practice here is you need to build your credit, right? So ideally, you use your credit card and then you pay off your entire balance every month. And that's, you know, kind of, I think, the best practice. And if you don't have a credit file, there are also credit building loans, which, depending on the interest rate, can be pretty decent for people. You know, let's say you got a $500 loan and you pay back in installments. And that's a good way to build your credit if you're somebody who's, like, young, let's say, or an immigrant or new to the country. That's a good way to build up your credit because sometimes, you know, we talk a lot about people who have bad credit, but we don't always talk about people who just have no credit, which especially for young people is just, you know, kind of part of life.
Well, younger people, I presume, have lower credit scores than older people?
They have lower credit scores and some of them don't have a credit file. I mean, you're not born with a credit score. And so unless you've had a credit card, you don't have a credit score necessarily. You don't have a big credit report necessarily, right? And so that's why you kind of want to get a credit card maybe when you're 18 if you can, but sometimes not having that credit file at all makes lenders really hesitant to work with you because they just have no idea who you are.
To reiterate a point, though, that you made, You wrote, the companies don't do anything people can't do on their own. If there's an error, you can and should dispute it yourself. In fact, credit repair agencies can be less effective than the average person at getting mistakes wiped from their credit histories because, as Andrew Pizor, a senior attorney with NCLC, explained, the law says that credit reporting agencies have to respond only to dispute letters directly from consumers. Credit repair businesses try hard to make it seem like disputes are from customers, and the agencies try just as hard to sniff out whether that's going on. How often would you recommend I check my, how would I know if somebody's using my credit card? I guess I would get a statement or an, it would either appear on my statement or you'd get a warning from your credit card company saying, suddenly you have a bill in Alabama and you don't live in Alabama, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good idea to keep an eye on your credit card statements, right? I try to once a month take a look, okay, you know, what's going on? Did I actually do this? Did I not? Also, just to monitor your own spending. I mean, again, a lot of credit card companies, like you said, are pretty good at this day and age and flagging for you, like, hey, so, I mean, earlier this year it happened to me. Somebody went to Wingstop in California. I live in New York, and they spent $150, and it got flagged. And so, you know, it's a good idea to keep an eye out for that. And then in terms of monitoring your credit, you know, one person I talked to kind of said, this isn't your SAT score. If your score is 750, 780, that's great. That's wonderful. And I think kind of the way I came to think about it is kind of like a 401k. Maybe check in like once a month to make sure there's nothing really funky going on. And I do think it's a good idea to look at your credit report because, as you mentioned, there are mistakes on those. They're pretty common. And you do just want to keep an eye out if somebody has, you know, my name is Emily Stewart. I live in New York. Emily Stewart out in Wisconsin. Does something bad that winds up on my credit report, I'm going to want to know that and be able to fly to the credit bureau, hey, this wasn't me.
$150 at a Wingstop, huh?
Yeah. Well, you know, but my credit card company knew I asked. That wasn't going to be something I was doing.
Did they then, in that instance, when that happens, do we assume that somebody, in fact, did get the chicken, but then the card flagged it for you, or did they stop the sale at the point of purchase? Did they get the chicken or not?
No, I genuinely don't know whether or not they got the chicken. I mean, I think a lot of people have had this happen to them, right, where suddenly you get something flagged. And I think sometimes you do get stopped, and sometimes, you know, you get the chicken or whatever. And I really don't know if that person got their chicken or not. They had gone to Pizza Hut before, and that didn't get flagged, so they did at least get a pizza.
Emily Stewart is a senior correspondent at Business Insider. Read about this at businessinsider.com. Thank you, Emily.
Thank you.
More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A new report says Chicago will see growth in life sciences in the coming years. Commercial real estate services firm Cushman & Wakefield says life science construction will soon come to market, and that will lower vacancy rates in the sector, which have been as high as 20% in the first half of this year. The report comes after the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity recently released a five-year plan that included life sciences among five industries where growth is expected. The Cushman & Wakefield report examined four major markets, Chicago, Boston, Denver, and Los Angeles. It cited development of funding and mentorship programs, including the healthcare incubator Matter, aimed at life sciences. The Village of Bloomingdale has released a conceptual redevelopment plan of the site where the Stratford Mall currently stands. The project includes a mixed entertainment area called The Grove and features restaurants, shopping, apartment, and public spaces surrounding a lake. Drawing released this week also shows fountains along with new walkways and elaborate landscaping. The mall closed its doors in April after more than 40 years in business. Demolition is expected to start next month and is expected to cost about $4.7 million. Bloomingdale will own the property until a buyer is found for the project. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business food, here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And it's a big food weekend coming up in our town. It's the Chicago Gourmet Festival. And while you may not consider the Wiener's Circle as gourmet, there is a connection. And of course, where the iconic Clark Street hot dog joint is involved, there is some crude language.
What the F do you want?
Yeah, what that's all about after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, how about this? this for a deal. Take a plastic bottle to the Wiener's Circle in Lincoln Park, and you'll probably be insulted.
Which is something that they're well known for.
But you may get a free apron.
We collaborated with the Wiener's Circle, so there's a logo, and you'll also see a fun little question, which is, what the F do you want?
That's Christiana Paul, the chief brand officer for Hexclad, a cookware company you may have heard of.
We have a proprietary hybrid technology, which combines the performance of stainless steel with the easy cleanup of nonstick.
Gordon Ramsay likes it.
He's a huge fan of the brand and uses it on his shows, in his restaurants, and in his own home.
And there's more.
We have a full line of products, including really high quality cutlery, cutting boards, salt and pepper grinders, aprons.
And this weekend at the Chicago Gourmet Festival, all the chefs will be wearing those aprons.
What's really cool about them is that the fabric is made of 100% recycled PET, made from recycled water bottles that are melted and spun into a sustainable yarn and then woven to create our hex twill fabric.
And if you want one of those aprons, Saturday and Sunday, if you take a plastic bottle to the Wiener's Circle, you'll probably get an insult and one of the aprons.
They have little pockets for kitchen tools. And on the underside, there's an accessible conversion chart for measuring ingredients on the fly.
Lots of big names in town for a series of events at the Gourmet Festival beginning tonight. But if you don't have tickets, there's always that free apron deal if you can handle the insults while supplies last. The aprons, not the insults. They never run out of those at the Wiener Circle. On the food calendar, it's National Dumpling Day and National Pancake Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
More from the Your Hometown series as we explore Roselle. Ride with us today and we'll show you why Roselle is the perfect place to call your hometown. Brought to you by Illinois Lottery, doing good at supporting Illinois communities, and by McDonald's.
They got him a chocolate company out there called Happy Chocolate or Happy Buy Chocolate. And it's a mother, daughter, granddaughter operation. And Pam View is one of them and Mary Getz is another. Ladies, welcome to WGN. How are you?
Very good.
Fine, how are you?
There you
go.
Thank
you for having us.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for having us. Is that you, Pam?
That would be Marcy.
I see. Okay. Marcy and Pam. Mother and daughter, right? Tell us about so when did this business start? How did you all get into the chocolate making business?
You take that one, Pam.
I was a hobby cook for a long time, was going around. Also, we have great chefs in the, this was quite some time ago, great chefs in the area, Chicago area, and happened to take a demo class, actually, on chocolate. That led, one thing led to the other, took a starter class and fell in love with what you could do with chocolate. And from there, I started taking courses through French pastry chef and chocolatier that was the only one available in New Jersey for a few years.
Wow.
And that's where my base, this was a long time ago, so you have a lot more available now, but that's how my base started.
So then when did you all go into business? Right then, or was that still just a hobby?
Well, you sort of did what we call the hobby business. You know, you were trial and error, but you had a good time and you learned a lot. I'm good at making and coming up with ideas. As far as all the other end of it, that's where Marcy takes over. She doesn't want my job, and I don't want hers, and we're a great combo.
Yeah.
She's in one.
And actually, she's not tooting her own horn enough. What it started with was her English talkie recipe when she was just taking classes and gave it as gifts to friends. And then people started going crazy over it and asking to purchase it. So we kind of fell into business on accident and realized what her amazing talent was. And again, started it. It was supposed to be just a little hobby business to do it on the side, and it just kept growing, and here we are.
So, Marcy, what are your best sellers then? What do people buy the most of, Marcy?
The English toffee is still our best seller. The second best seller would be from, believe it or not, our vegan line, that she has a chocolate peanut butter pillows that is a bestseller with our traditional and our vegan customers.
Wow. That's probably a whole new area to expand if you can grow that area, right?
It's amazing. When Pam first started developing, it started with just somebody asking her if she could make a vegan toffee. She's always up to a challenge, so she started investigating it, but it needed to have a taste profile that a traditional chocolate lover would not know and say, oh, this is vegan or missing something. So she worked on the recipe for a long time, came up with it, and once she had the vegan English toffee and it was a hit, she started expanding it. So she has an amazing full line of the vegan chocolates, too.
So if I go to Happy Bite Chocolate, will I see the whole menu of options, Marcy?
You will see the whole menu of options,
and
yes.
I'll get some toffee. Maybe I'll try the vegan peanut butter. Give me one other thing you would suggest I click on.
I'm going to give you one of my favorites. If you love cinnamon, I love the Cinnamon Toast Toffee.
I can tell. ladies, we're out of time, but congratulations as we shine our light on Roselle. This isn't the only town or business we're featuring, but Pam, congratulations, and Marcy as well. Our best to your mom, and keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.